Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BiteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And today marks the very beginning of our fifth year of broadcasting, and I am very delighted to have as my guest today Dr. Terry A. Gordon. Dr. Gordon is a Cleveland Clinic-trained cardiologist, practiced within the mainstream medicine, for more than two decades. Named the American Heart Association's National Physician of the Year in 2002, Dr. Gordon is nationally recognized in matters of the heart. As a motivational speaker, he has shared the stage with Dr. Wayne Dyer. As a musician, he is the co-host of Doctors Who Rock, a United Way event. He is currently spearheading a national campaign called the Josh Miller Hearts Act, which will place automated external defibrillators, AEDs, in every school in the country, protecting from sudden cardiac arrest our most precious resource, our children. He is author of No Storm Lasts Forever, Transforming Suffering into Insight. You can find out more about Dr. Gordon by visiting his website, which is www.drterrygordon.com, and it's drterrygordon.com for those of you who are just listening on our podcast. So with that, I'd like to welcome Terry to the show. Good day, sir. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, happy anniversary, Robert. I had no idea this was such a fantastic day. Now I understand.
How about that? Yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah, beginning of year five. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. It's been a very interesting 4 years. So, well, I'm really happy to have you on the show and talk. You know, the whole process of transforming suffering into insight is one of those areas that so many people struggle with sometimes. And, you know, it's one thing I hope by the end of today's show that people will get some insight and some guidance on how to kind of apply that to their life. So I'd like to start with, if you wouldn't mind, the book, your book, No Storm Lasts Forever, Transforming Suffering into Insight. You share a personal tragedy that occurred in your life, and I read a little bit about it, but I would really like, if you wouldn't mind, if you could share that with the listeners and how that inspired you to write your book.
Well, this was June 30th of 2009. And my daughter, Maddie Rose, who was teaching in Chicago, had come in for a weekend visit. And I was up in my room doing a little work on the computer. And she walked into my office. And, you know, it's a parent's sixth sense when you can just kind of tell something's not quite right. I said, "What's up, sweetie?" And she came around the side of my desk and plopped herself down at my feet and put her arms up on my knees. And she said, "You know, Dad, I always thought that the older I got, the more control I assumed over my life, the easier life would become." And then with this heavy sigh and a single tear trickling down her cheek, she said, "You know, Dad, it's just not working out that way." And I pulled her up in my arms and I rocked her as I had for 27 some odd years. And I thought for a very long time, Robert, before I responded to her, because I knew what I was about to say would be very important. And I said, "You know, sweetie, I think that's the way life is supposed to be. If we are to grow, if we are to mature, if we are to become more enlightened, we must face greater and greater obstacles, because it's only by overcoming those hardships that we actually grow." And I shared with her that everything's in perfect order. Everything that she's going through at this moment is in perfect order. And I quoted to her from the Kabbalah, which is the ancient mystical text of Judaism. And in it says, "It's the falls of our life that provide us the energy to propel us onto a higher path. It's the falls of our life. And I left her with one final thought as I kissed her on the forehead, when I said, you know, honey, we really should be grateful for the crap that comes our way. And I left her with that thought that night. And the next morning at 6:20, I received one of the worst phone calls a parent could get. The grave voice on the other end of the line shared with me that our son Tyler, who was living then out in Durango, Colorado, had flipped his car over and over again, and that he had shattered his neck. And then came the dreaded words, your son is quadriplegic. Well, you know, as a parent, you dread those sorts of phone calls. You worry about them. You fret when the kids don't come in when they're supposed to, or if they come home in a state you're not particularly pleased with. But you can't imagine, Robert, the impact of those words when you hear it. I had about 20 seconds of denial, and then the doctor and me kicked in. They were getting ready to lifeflight him to Denver from Durango, Colorado, where he would undergo emergency surgery to stabilize his neck and prevent any more damage to the spinal cord. And like I said, I had denial for about 20 seconds, and then I knew exactly where we were going and what we were going to be facing. And within an hour, I had hastily packed a bag and bolted from the house, trying to get up to the Cleveland airport, where there was an overbooked nonstop flight that, if I were to be able to get on it, could get me there before Tyler went into surgery. And as I was speeding up to the airport, it hit me that I had left my wife wailing. Now, Angela is one of the strongest women I know, strongest people I know. I don't think I've ever seen her cry. Now, I cry at the drop of a hat, but she never, and she was wailing. And I'll tell you, man, I felt so badly, because the most important person in my life, I hadn't attempted to console. But I knew she knew I needed to get up to the airport. Well, when I got to the airport, there were 8 people ahead of me on this overbooked flight. And I don't know how, but somehow I got a seat on that flight. And I was seated next to a window. And now I'm a caged cat. I'm incommunicado, so I don't know if Tyler is alive, dead, bleeding out from internal organ injuries. It was just the worst 3 hours of my entire life. And I felt, Robert, like I was in this tornado. And it was loud, and it was whooshing, and it was chaotic, and it was dank, and it was dark. And I remember looking down the funnel of this tornado, and it was just pure blackness. It was so frightening. And I remember saying over and over again, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. And gradually, that loud whooshing sound and the darkness and the dampness abated as I became enveloped in this cocoon of white noise. And it became this place of unfathomable peace. But I still was saying, I can't do this. I can't. I can't. And I won't tell you that I heard the voice of God, because I really don't remember. But I heard the words from deep within me when God said, yes, you can. And I said, but I don't have the skills to do this. I don't know how to do this. And God said, well, Terry, just last night you were sharing your truth with your daughter, Maddie Rose. Everything's in perfect order. Even this is in perfect order. And you just got through telling your daughter that. Now, you can talk the talk, but now you're going to have to. But I still was doubtful. And I said, but how do I do this? And God made the most profound statement to me when God said, treat this as if it was something you had chosen. Now, why would I do that? Why would I choose a tragedy such as this? What possible good could come from such a life-altering calamity? What lessons could possibly be hidden in such turmoil? I mean, these were questions that were scrolling through my mind, but somehow I felt at that moment that I was being blessed with a different way to go about. You know, some people believe that we actually choose what it is we are going to experience in a particular lifetime, and that choice is based on what our spirit needs. Others feel that, you know, God chooses this for us, but the treat this as if it was chosen, something you had chosen, was just so profound. And so what happened to me at that juncture is that I had come to a fork in the road. It happened to be 30,000 feet in the air in an airplane. But I came to a fork in the road that I had two choices. I could continue on the same chaotic path that I had been on for much of my life, or in helping my family and helping my son go through this and helping me go through this, I could take a different path. And that path became a miraculous one. It really did. You know, at first, though, and this didn't happen right away, but at first the challenge for me became adjusting my perception of what had happened enough to recognize the presence of God within it. And in order to do that, I had to take my mind way, way, way beyond what I had previously judged as good or bad. I came to accept, Robert, that adversity is a gift from God. It may not come in the most beautifully wrapped package. In fact, it may be so disgustingly hideous that it's nearly impossible to comprehend how it could ever be of benefit, but it's a gift nonetheless. I also came to appreciate that this realm in which we live, it's the perfect circumstance in which we can approach what it is we all seek, and that is insight and enlightenment. You know, when life is hunky-dory, it's a lot of fun, but we really don't grow very much during that period. It's only when we face obstacles such as this, adversity such as this, and this human realm in which we live is the perfect place to experience that, because, you know, stuff is going to happen. Bad stuff is going to happen. Perceived bad stuff is going to happen. None of us are immune to that. We're going to have pain and turmoil at some point. But life, I have found, is, or I should say I have embraced, is beautifully coupled, not only with those things that cause us to suffer, it's beautifully coupled with those things that bring us pleasure as well. And because of that, we're not overly burdened by the negative aspect of these experiences. The question becomes, Robert, is there such a thing as a negative experience? And I don't think there is. I think these so-called negative encounters actually can be a blessing in disguise. They're catalysts for change, fodder for growth. And the critical thing, and the thing that is so difficult to do, is that you have to free yourself of the attachment to what you perceive as good experiences as much as you let go of the aversion to those things that you consider negative experiences. In truth, there's no duality.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the one thing, first of all, I know some people in my life that are very blessed. They got so much adversity, they got gifts coming at them right and left. So, but you know, it's the whole idea of changing or shifting the perception of our experience seems to be the critical aspect to that transformation of suffering into insight. It seems to me that shift in perception is really what it's about. And now, when you indicated that you were, as you were flying, you had that sense of the tornado, kind of all around you. I know a lot of people who have actually used that very same visual of a tornado to describe their life, you know, and what was going on, and really struggled to work their way toward the eye of the storm, where it's calm, you know, and peaceful. So for you, now, you indicated that you kind of got, you had that, you know, I can't do this kind of thing. And then, you know, you got the answer back that yes, you can. And luckily, you know, you had just had that experience with Mandy Rose to be able to draw on. But for those people out there who feel that their life is traumatic, you know, and that things kind of be around them are you know, very chaotic. What would you suggest that they do to begin that shift in perception?
Well, my buddy Wayne Dyer often says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And in a nanosecond on that flight, I made that shift in consciousness. I decided how I was going to perceive it. You know, if you perceive it, and it could be, you know, a tragic accident like this, circumstances in life, if you perceive that as a negative experience, that's exactly what it's going to be. On the other hand, if you embrace that a tragedy is only a tragedy if you decide to make it so. Your life is only a tragedy if you decide to make it so. My feeling, my belief, and what I have come to appreciate is that if you learn something from an experience, it's not tragic. If you learn any positive from an experience, it's not, you know, and you know, the natural response to that is, well, how do you explain the Holocaust?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a difficult question to answer. But if each of those individuals who lost their lives in the Holocaust learned one thing from their experience. Have you ever read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl?
No, I haven't.
It is a marvelous book. It was written by a concentration camp survivor. A little short thing. It's been around for 30 or 40 years. I remember reading it during my psychology training. And that's basically what he was saying. You know, even in Auschwitz, even watching the murder of thousands and thousands and thousands of people, he could find beauty. He found meaning in that. And you know, I mean, what we've gone through, you know, it's in many ways very sad. In many ways, it's very beautiful. I've watched my son Robert grow in ways he never, ever, ever would have, ever. And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And purposeful. You know, it's just. It's not the way any of us thought, you know, life was going to be. Who was it?
Right.
John Lennon that said, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans. Well, you know, we had other plans. I had just retired, and life was ahead of us, and we were, you know, but it's different now. And what I have grown into being able to do is accepting it and not resisting it. And most of us, when we experience turmoil, we resist it. And when you resist that, the gift, you suffer. It's only when you accept the gift. About a year into this ordeal, and Tyler was injured 5 years ago. And the first year was terrible, I'm going to tell you. It was very tumultuous and very stressful, and it was like we were in a boat paddling in different directions, and just nothing had settled in yet. And I received a phone call from my urologist because my PSA started climbing a little bit. And my father died of prostate cancer when he was 53, so I've always been very vigilant, you know. And so I decided to get a biopsy, and I really knew it was going to be normal because I didn't have any symptoms. I don't look a thing like Dad, and I've been taking care of myself, and lo and behold, the urologist calls and says, well, congratulations, Terry. I don't believe this, but you've got prostate cancer. And I remember, or I should say, you know how you think you'll respond when you're given that diagnosis? I didn't respond that way at all. I remember kind of looking up and thinking, okay, God, obviously you think I can do this. Well, let's do it, you know? And it became that simple, and I know that sounds trite. But it became that simple because I knew there are no mistakes. There is everything's in perfect order. So my prostate cancer was in perfect order. And I'll share another aspect of that. When I got that diagnosis, when I first heard the words, I felt like a little boy caught with his hand in the cookie jar. because life was so stressful at that time for us. And I let it inculcate into my being, that stress. And I knew I was going to get sick. I just knew it because it just was so toxic. And that helped to propel me onto that higher path that I talked about earlier. So it's all in acceptance and not resisting. Everything's in perfect order. And if you accept that, there are no accidents. There are no missteps. There are no mistakes. But it takes a leap of faith.
Well,
it takes a leap.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's, gosh, it was 2 days ago. I had a woman on my show. Her name is Amy Ostreicher, and she's a one-woman Broadway show. Well, when she was 18 years old, her stomach exploded, and she was in a coma for months and months. And you know, she, you know, as a teenager, that was like devastating. But in the, you know, the 9 years since then, you know, she dove into art when she couldn't eat or drink, and that led to, from one thing to another, and now she has a one-woman show that talks all about, you know, surviving what you wouldn't think, you know, one would be able to survive as a teenager, and she's meeting her goals that she had back then, but with a brand new perspective of life. And it seems like, you know, when you are given these challenges and you embrace them, like you say, and overcome them or go through them, it seems that, you know, the gift on the other end of it is a greater awareness, and in many cases it's a deeper appreciation of life.
Well, you know, I think that's our purpose. I think that's what we're doing here. You know, a lot of people think we're here to craft a reputation and, you know, become successful. And we're here for that transformational enlightenment. And that transformational enlightenment can be just a tiny little step higher in that realm, or it could be a fantastically large step. But that's what we're here for. We're here to learn. We're here to grow spiritually and to become more enlightened. And that enlightenment can be from, you know, brushing the arm of another person when you're on the street. So I think that's what this is all about. And you know, that lady that you just described whose stomach exploded, that was a gift. You know?
Yeah.
If she hadn't had that, she wouldn't be the person she is today, and she wouldn't be where she is spirit. You know, you're familiar with Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross?
Oh, yeah.
She wrote the book on death and dying. And one of the things that she described was what happens spiritually to children who have terminal diseases. And their spiritual awareness, their spiritual growth skyrockets early in their lives, because their time here is limited, and so we can learn from them. You know, the key is trying not to wait until something like this happens, you know, I think the stage was being set for me for years and years before all this happened. I just wasn't aware of it. You know, Wayne Dyer coming into my life, I had read a couple of his books and tried to call him to thank him for helping me, and never got in touch with him, and ended up bumping into him. You know, what are the chances of that happening, you know?
Yeah, very synchronistic, huh?
It was.
It's wonderful when those kinds of things happen. So now, you know, with this, you know, with Tyler's you know, accident and kind of working through all of that. When you now encounter challenges, like you mentioned about the prostate cancer, now whenever you're confronted with something new that seems that what many of us would consider a negative, is your automatic or natural reaction now is to view that as a gift and maybe look for what meaning it has for you, or what it can, how that it can help you grow?
Well, yes. I mean, each time, and many things have happened in our lives, you know, since this has happened, and it has affected each of my children differently. But I have this appreciation, this knowing that I can handle anything that God gives me. And when you go into it with that, and I'm have not always been a strong person, you know. When I was an adolescent, you know, I considered myself a weak person. But I think everyone has that strength within them. It's just a matter of recognizing it and being receptive to it. You know, it's kind of like the you remember that show the Martian, My Friend the Martian, or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, My Favorite Martian.
My favorite Martian. And he had these antennae that came up whenever he was receptive.
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh. And actually, Mork had the same sort of antennae. If you have those antennae up and receptive for all of the miraculous things that are out there, you'll find that you'll connect with them. And once you receive that, and once you're receptive to it, miracles abound. You know, from A Course in Miracles, you know, when miracles abound, when they don't occur, there's something terribly wrong. And that's what I have learned in my life and through my experience. So you're right. Each time something comes up, in my mind's eye, failure is just not an option. Now, I will tell you, I have doubts at times, but I have found that strength in knowing, that unwavering strength in knowing that, you know, whatever comes my way is not a mistake, and God's not going to give me something that I can't take care of. And I didn't embrace that before this, Robert. I'll tell you that. I never believed, you know, God doesn't give you a bear or whatever, you know. I never embraced that.
Yeah, I wonder, because, you know, it does seem that, you know, particularly experiences that are very intense, that, you know, really kind of shake us to our foundations. It seems that it's those kinds of experiences that really catapult us to a higher level quicker, as far as an understanding of our existence, what is really important in our life, and reprioritizing our daily activities, you know, to support what we feel is more important.
How many of us don't do that, though? Most of us don't do that. You
know,
we just get so busy in our lives and waste our energy worrying about senseless things in the overall scheme of things.
Yeah.
Until something bad happens, quote bad, and then we change for a little bit, and then we kind of go back to the old way. But when something like this happens to you, I'm sorry?
We're such creatures of habit, aren't we?
Oh, we are. So. We are.
But what's important is if we change our habits or we modify our habits so that, you know, that when those things happen, the you know, the reaction tends to be more toward the positive, toward the more accepting, toward the less judgmental, you know, aspect. It won't be perfect, but as long as we can make that happen more often than not, then I think we're on the right path.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, my friend.
Very much. Well, gosh, we're already halfway through the show, Terry, so I want to take just a quick break and invite anyone who's listening, if you would like to call in and ask Terry any questions. You can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you who are listening live in the chat room, if you would like for me to pose a question to Terry, feel free to type it into the chat room, and I'll be sure to share it with him. And then, Terry, when we come back, what I'd like to do is move into a little bit into talking about your book. You know, you've got it broken down into several parts, and I have to say that, you know, a lot of the titles, it appears, are from songs. So when I was reading the chapter titles, I had all of these songs going through my head.
It's every chapter, and you know what? You want to know something, Robert? You're the first person that's ever made that comment to me. They are all titles.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You're the first one.
Well, I couldn't help it. I mean, as I was going through, I mean, it's like, oh, boy, that was one of my favorite songs. So, anyway, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that, okay?
Okay.
Okay, good. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes.
Hi, it's Maya at Mind Over Matter in Nyack, New York. I'd just like to take a moment to share with you how amazing I found Robert Sharpe's book, Joy Potential. It kind of found me at a time when I was feeling out of sorts and overwhelmed and I guess derailed by the pressures of my career and my large family and caregiving and ailing husband. I just really felt like my spark was dimming. It was a perfect time for me to pick up Joy Potential because as I just in the first few pages began to read, I found that my frame of mind wasn't so different from others dealing with challenges and the trials and tribulations of life. I guess my first feeling was that I wasn't alone, and with that I began to open more to receive the message that Robert gave of light and love and positive thinking. That's what Joy Potential is all about. His thoughts are beautifully written, and everyone, whether you're going through your own personal challenges, should read it. His message was certainly well received from me, and I'm thankful for his insight and his caring and really helping me to get back on track. I think everyone should put Joy Potential on the top of their reading list. Love and light. Thank you.
Join Maya and discover that you are not alone and that a world of joy awaits you. To get your copy of Joy Potential, visit www.joybook.me. Buy it, read it, and start living a life that's happier, more peaceful, and one where you maximize the joy potential that life has to offer. Again, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me now.
This is Roy Worley at mysticalship.com. R.P. Sharpe has done it again. His new book, It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, with BITE, B-I-T-E, being an acronym for Bringing Inspiration to Earth, has once again hit a home run. Unlike R.P. Sharpe's first book, Joy Potential, which was a uniquely original story containing a message of hope and inspiration for everyone regardless of where they happen to be on their personal spiritual path. It's No Secret is a compilation of awareness, insights, guidance, and wisdom that can help anyone navigate through their lives on a daily basis. It's No Secret also contains resources and references that enable a person to find expanded information on a variety of issues that affect all of us. Order It's No Secret today. I guarantee it will be a valuable resource for help with whatever your needs are.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, today my very special guest is Dr. Terry A. Gordon, and he is author of No Storm Lasts Forever, Transforming Suffering into Insight. And again, his information about his book, speaking, he's got videos, a blog, and all of that is available at his website, which is drterrygordon.com, and that's D-R-T-E-R-R-Y. GORDON.com. And I do have a direct link to Terry's website in the show page description. Okay, with that, Terry, we're back.
Nice to be back.
Okay, great. Okay, so like I mentioned before the break, the your book had all of them, obviously, now that you said, are titles of songs. Before we go into some of them and maybe you can tell the story, your book is broken down into three parts. Part one is called The Gathering Storm. Part two is The Sky is Crying. And part three is The Sun Shines Dancing on the Clouds. So if you wouldn't mind explaining for the listeners, you know, why you have that breakup and what does each part address?
Well, you know, the title of the book, Robert, is No Storm Lasts Forever. And, you know, even God has never created a storm that lasts forever. You know, every storm that ever has been created always has an end. Now, when you're in the midst of it, it may seem like it's never going to end. But no storm lasts forever. And so the ideas came to me, and I need to tell you, the whole idea for this book came from Wayne. God love him, he called Wayne Dyer. He called every day, you know, after Tyler's accident, and suggested that I journal. And I had never done that before. I'd never kept a diary, but he said, you know, Terry, you're going to be going through some pretty fantastic things here, and you just need to journal. And I started doing that. And the strange thing, Robert, is that, you know, I would write things down, and then I would leave them, and I'd come back, and in a different frame of mind, see it totally differently. And so I started kind of journaling to a couple of my friends, and they said, you know, Terry, this is something you can't keep to yourself. You have to share this. So the part one is the gathering storm, and that is the description of basically what I just shared with you, the experience on the airplane and setting the stage for the storm that was going to occur. And the sky is crying is when, you know, we were in the midst of this darkness. And then as things started to settle, that's where the sunshine's dancing on the clouds. The clouds were still there, but the sunshine was still dancing. And you know, I had this experience, and I would imagine many people have, when you're taking off in a jet, you know, an airline, and you're completely surrounded in clouds, and all of a sudden you eclipse the clouds, and you find that the sun is shining up there, even though you were immersed in the clouds. And that's one of the important lessons that I've learned from this, is that beauty abounds even when you're in the belly of the beast. And I experienced that one day. This was about a week into our experience. Tyler was in the intensive care unit and almost died three times. And one morning, we were staying in an apartment juxtaposed to a hospital. And one morning, I awoke. And when I opened up my eyes, the curtains, there was a tiny crack in the curtains, and the sun was streaming in through the curtains, through the glass, and it was projecting orbs, you know, prisms up on the wall, and they were dancing around the walls and the ceilings. And when I first opened my eyes to this beautiful scene, I remember thinking, oh, thank you, God, what a beautiful day, thank you, thank you. And then suddenly I realized where I was and what we were doing. And I realized that I had just enjoyed something when my wife couldn't and my son couldn't. And then it hit me, and I was feeling so guilty that I had enjoyed something. And then it hit me, why shouldn't I enjoy the beautiful day? It's there. Why shouldn't I enjoy the beautiful flowers? They're there. They're just like a little puppy dog sitting right next to you, just patiently waiting for a little of your attention. So the lesson I learned from this is we have a choice. We have a choice what we're going to focus on. That doesn't mean if you choose to focus on the beauty that you don't care about your loved one. It doesn't mean that at all. That enables you to better take care of your loved one. So the non-duality of life is very important. Lao Tzu talks about that in the second verse of the Tao Te Ching. You know, the monsoon is countered by a calm, sunny day. Perfect health is balanced by life. Threatening disease and injury, darkness is countered by illumination. They're really one and the same. You can't have light without darkness. You can't. Darkness is just a paucity of light. You have to experience both of those extremes. But they're not different things. They're one and the same. So when the crap comes and the turmoil hits you, you need to experience that. You may not want to, but you need to. In order to truly find peace, you have to know what turmoil is. And let me just finish this one point. If you anticipate those things coming your way instead of trying to avoid them, and I'm not saying you go out looking for heartache, but if you anticipate them as the gifts that they are, then your life is enriched when they happen. And I know that sounds crazy, and people always raise an eyebrow whenever I say that. But it's so important to do that rather than to resist it, because if you resist it, you're going to have a life of sadness and turmoil and frustration and stress and anxiety.
Yeah, and it's very true. Now, you know, there was one point I kind of would like to, you know, just talk about a little bit more. And I think, you know, this is part of, you know, that transformation process. You know, when you were describing that little magical experience, that little bit of joy, the beauty that you experienced, you know, and you indicated just a momentary sense of guilt, you know, because, you know, one of the things that I find with, I actually know of three people in my life right now in an extended circle who have lost, or whose people have transitioned into spirit. And they are stuck in the grieving process. And one of them actually told me at one point that they really want to experience happiness because it makes them feel guilty. And of course, I usually tend to say, well, you know, what would they want? Would they want you to be sad? Would they want you to be, you know, not enjoying life? And usually the response is no. But, you know, it seems that maybe what is your view of this? And is it a cultural kind of conditioning that maybe leads some people to feel that, you know, they have to kind of embrace sorrow and really not enjoy life? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, there are certainly cultural aspects to this. But, you know, I mean, so many people say, at least, whether they believe it or not, they say, you know, they're in a better place. Well,
no,
I happen to believe that. And I'm not talking about from a religious point of view, but from a spiritual point of view. You know, I had this experience, a life-changing experience, late into my career. I had this little lady in my practice. Her name was Audrey. And Audrey had a very sick heart. And I had implanted one of the original implantable defibrillators in her, the units that shock the heart back into regular rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And she really had outlived her disease by 10 years. I never thought she would make it this long. And one morning she came into the hospital and this thing was just banging away at her. It shocked her, Robert, I bet you it shocked her 80 times with her awake each time.
Oh,
it was terrible. And despite my efforts, I couldn't calm her heart down. And so at the end of the day, she called me into her room. And she said, you know, Terry, I'm not afraid to die. I've actually been dying for 10 years. And I said, oh, no, Audrey, you've been living for 10 years. She said, no, I've actually been preparing for my death for 10 years by getting rid of the stuff that's not important. And she wasn't talking just about material stuff. But she said, you know, I'm not afraid to die, but I don't want to live like this. Will you turn the device off? And I said, well, of course I will, but you understand that the next time you have this heart rhythm problem, you're going to cross over? And she said, yeah, I understand. And she had no family in town, so she was by herself. So I turned the device off, and I shared with her how honored I had been to help take care of her. And she said, you know, I just have one more question. Will you hold my hand? And I said, Audrey, of course I'll hold your hand. Now, I've been around thousands of people as they die. Usually I'm the one frantically trying to keep them from doing so. I've never had anybody ask me to hold their hand as they were dying. So I invited the nurse out of the room, and I'm holding her hand. And we're talking about the South. She's from South Carolina. I'm from Kentucky. And I was caressing her hand, and her hand was responsive to mine. And I could see the monitor when she went into a cardiac arrest, and her eyes kind of gently fluttered, rolled into the back of her head, and she very peacefully transitioned. Now, as she did so, she lost her bladder control. So I'm now seated on her bed in a pool of her urine, holding her hand. And I couldn't move. It was such a special moment. And I was looking at this hand. And it was the same hand I had just been holding. Only one thing had changed. The spirit had left the vessel. It had the same bone, skin, cell. Everything in that hand was the same, except the spirit had left the vessel. And for that 2 or 3 seconds that I allowed myself to experience it, I could feel her energy swirling behind me, and then it was gone. And then I looked back at the hand, and the weirdest thing crossed my mind. Do you remember the movie E.T.?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You remember when E.T.'s bony finger leaned over and ding, touched the flower, and the flower withered? And then he touched it again, and ding, the flower came back to life? It hit me that God had just dinged Audrey. Now, the one thing, we think we know a lot in science and medicine. We don't know squat. The one thing we do know is that energy doesn't die. It transforms. It changes. Mm-hmm. It goes somewhere. But it doesn't die, and it doesn't die forever. Ad infinitum, eternity. Much like I believe that energy existed for eternity before we were dinged into this body. So if you buy that, eternity before we come here, eternity after we're here, the time that we're here is infinitesimal, Robert. It's not insignificant, but it's infinitesimal. And so, you know, when we say we know our loved one is in a better place, they really are. Not their body, but their spirit. Their spirit lives on forever. That energy lives on forever. So, is it important to grieve? Yes, it is. But when grieving overtakes you, and when grieving becomes a way of life, and when grieving is, I'll never be able to be happy again, that's where it's very, very detrimental to the spirit.
Yeah, yeah, that is, you know, and it was, it's just one of those things where, you know, and I obviously, a lot relies on your belief system. So if you believe that, you know, your energy, your soul, whatever it is that is an essence of you lives on, then, you know, it's, I think, or I found, that people tend to move through the process a little smoother. The process is a little bit smoother than those who maybe feel that, you know, once you die, it's kind of like the be all the end all. You'll never see them again, you know, or the essence of who was that person is gone forever, you know, and you know, that whole idea would make it sad, you know, if someone believed, you know, that. You know, we don't go on after our existence. So I think a lot of it really kind of falls into the belief, our belief system.
Mm-hmm. There's a story about, and I think he was an ambassador to one of the European countries during World War II. And he had planned an event for this particular night and received a wire that morning that his only son had been killed in a car accident. And he decided to go ahead and have the party. And the night of the event, word started filtering around what had happened, and he overheard two ladies saying how terrible it was, how disrespectful it was, that he had just lost his only son, and here he is partying. And he overheard that conversation and walked over to the ladies, and he said, you know, I have to explain something to you. I loved my son more than I love life, and I have a choice. And that choice is, I can get over it sooner or later. And I've chosen sooner. Now, that doesn't mean he doesn't love his son. It's just that he has decided not to wallow in the pain. And we all do that. But to me, that was a beautiful thing. Just, you know, you make that conscious choice. It doesn't mean you love him any less, but I would guess most of the people that have transitioned before us would not want us to be unhappy or sad in the least bit. I know I wouldn't.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. I want people, you know, really? I mean, you know, down in New Orleans, they have a song and dance in the streets, you know. I mean,
that's right.
You know,
that's the way to do it.
Time, so. That's the way to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
As long as I don't get the bill for the party, I wouldn't bet.
Right. That's right. I'll pay you in ethereal dollars there.
Right.
Well, you know, Cass, we're down to 9 minutes, but I have a question that has been, you know, once I knew that you were going to be on the show, that's kind of been on my mind, and I just, you know, I don't often get to talk to cardiologists. So there's been a lot of, I've had a lot of people recently, there's been a lot of talk about the heart, the organ itself, as being more than just that little thing that just pumps our blood, that it's its own nerve center, that it holds memory, you know, and that kind of thing. You know, I mean, because I actually had one person that talked about, you know, it being like another brain of ours, you know what I mean, in the sense of being able to hold memory. What's as a cardiologist and someone who is, you know, intuitive and an understanding of the greater scope of life, what is your view of the heart and its role in our life?
Mm-hmm. That is an intriguing question. There's a book, I think it's called The Afterlife Experiments by Gary Schwartz, if I'm remembering correctly. And it talks just about that. It talks about this, I think he coined the phrase energy cardiology or something like that, where the heart, as it is beating, it sends information to every cell in the body. With each beat, every cell is not mm-hmm. only bathed with electrical energy, but it's also bathed in the blood cells that circulate and go through the heart. The heart does have a mind of its own, a brain of its own. There are, and I can't remember the exact number, but it's like 50,000 pathways that the heart has that are not controlled by the brain.
Mm.
I read probably 30,000 EKGs in the course of my lifetime. And it wasn't until the end of my career that this happened. I was in the zone, just kind of reading EKG after EKG, and it hit me. You know, the electromotive force of the heart is the strongest one in the body, and it travels at the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. So when it emanates from the heart, at the speed of 186,000 miles per second, it zips down the arms to those leads, you know, that they put on your legs and your arms.
Mm-hmm.
But what I never considered is what happens to that impulse after it reaches that lead. Does it stop? Is there a lead shield that it bangs into? No.
Yeah.
That energy continues on out into the universe at 186,000 miles per second. Do you know where your heartbeat is 1 minute after it beats? 11
no.
million miles away.
Oh.
That electrical energy
wow.
is 11 million miles away, touching whatever it is that happens to be out in the universe. It's kind of like you look up at the sky at night and you see the stars that are glistening in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Many of those stars are dead stars, but their energy at 186,000 miles per second is coming our way. Now, the intriguing thing,
yeah.
Robert, is what happens when you have a heart transplant? It's the same thing. Whose energy is it? Is the love from the original heart, which has already imprinted those cells, is
mm-hmm.
that where the love comes from? Or is it love from the new heart, the donor heart, who also is imprinting and circulating blood based on its message? Interesting
wow.
thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that anyway, that's I'll definitely have to look up that book and read that because you know, that to me that was fascinating, you know, and there's so much that I think that we're learning now, you know, about, the energy and our, the different parts of our body. It's such a magical piece of work that we have here that we inhabit, and it's really it's just wonderful. And gosh, we're down to 4 minutes here, Perry. This has really gone by so fast.
That's good.
Yeah, it is good. Now, I've really enjoyed speaking with you, but I do want to just spend just a couple, the last few minutes talking about your book. Again, in your book, each of these chapters is a song title, or how did that happen?
Well, music's always been very important to me, and was a particular song that resonated with me back in the 70s, a song by Kenny Loggins called Cody Song. And I quoted those lyrics in the book, but what happened is early into my experience with Tyler, the song kept scrolling through my mind, the lyrics did. And the gist of the lyrics are, when you feel alone, when you feel afraid, don't worry, I'll be there to sing to you. And so those words kind of kept scrolling through my mind, and I just started, when I started titling the chapters, it just seemed like the right thing to do. Now, the interesting thing, yeah, Robert, is that I was in Lake Charles visiting my mother, and I had to take her car away from her, and it was not a real nice encounter. And when I got ready to leave, I kissed her and said, I love you, Mom. And she said, well, I don't love you, and I never want to see you again. So I go out to the airport in Lake Charles to find out that my flight's canceled. Well, I'm not going back to Mom's apartment. 3 hours later, they find us another flight, and we're getting ready to board. And the guy behind me says, man, I sure hope this doesn't screw up our connecting flights out of Houston. And I turned around to say, well, maybe they're delayed out of Houston, too. And I said, man, you look an awful lot like Kenny Loggins. And he goes, hi, I'm Kenny Loggins. Now, I had already used his lyrics. I hadn't gotten around to asking him. And, of course, he wrote one of the endorsements for the book. But that's the magic that occurs in life. I couldn't have orchestrated that if I wanted to. That is the universe,
yeah,
orchestrating events on your behalf. And the universe is not prejudiced. The universe will do that for everyone, if you're just receptive to it.
Yeah, very much so. Well, Terry, this has really been a wonderful chat. I really thank you for your time, and I have enjoyed every minute of our conversation.
Me as well, Robert. Thanks for having me on, and blessings to everyone.
Great, and you're very welcome. And again, now, people, you can go ahead and again visit Terry's website, which is drterrygordon.com. And on his website, you can see all of his social media connections and do connect with him there. I have liked his Facebook page, so I can follow him. So I hope that you do that as well. And everyone, I do want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.